Well, welcome to the... I don't want to give away all my tricks yet, so let me get rid of this. All right. Welcome to the introduction to loops, multitracks, and tech. If you are, like, amazing with this stuff already, this might not be the session for you, but we're going to talk... you might learn a few things. As far as library creation and things like that. But are all of you clear on what this is about? I'm using like either loops or what we call multi-tracks to play along to. In classical tradition, you might have heard of something called music minus one. Kind of gets made fun of a little bit for being something like that. but what we're doing in here is just talking about how like a normal person would use this stuff. I'm not an Ableton trainer. You can talk to an Ableton trainer. This is not like in-depth Ableton, although this is what I tend to use. And I'll recommend some other things that you can use. but this is a normal person, how you would use this stuff. My experience over some years of doing this, both the good and the bad, and even some cautions just about, you know, some of the dangers, I guess the temptations to idolatry that we can face with anything, maybe some of the snares to just not serving who we serve as well as we can, that can be kind of rolled up in this. you know, if we have enough trouble kind of getting ourselves out of the way, sometimes add a whole bunch of technology to that, and yeah, it just gets easier. So, again, I'm Patrick. I think I've seen a lot of you, like, in the guitar classes around. Patrick Anderson. I'm at Christ Community Church in Daytona Beach, Florida. Been there for 2 years before that as a prophet. Cedarville University in the music program there. Before that, Los Angeles, Enfield Crew, Grace Community Church, USC, grad school, music, stuff like that. But we are, again, just talking about an intro, how to get into this stuff, some of the considerations, what I use from Sunday to Sunday, what I found helpful and what I've found to be a challenge. So, let's see. I'm not trying to, like, talk you into using this. Hopefully give you, like, a balanced, this is what it's good for and this is the challenge about it. Let's see. Look at the how, the tools, the why. I remember talking to, I shouldn't say that, but I remember bringing it up and saying, hey, what if we did something like this? Because it's such a popular thing now. You see it, you hear about it used all over the place, people using this type of thing. And sometimes we can tend to think that, oh, maybe this is like the missing element in like our amazing sound or congregational singing and stuff like that. And that's not, it's, yeah, like I was saying to the class before we actually started, that we don't need any of this. And in fact, maybe the best thing is to not have any of it for whatever situation we're in. But yeah, let's get started with jumping into this. And again, how many people have used something like this before? Okay, not a lot. Who runs a click? Run a click? Okay, not a lot. This is the session for you. So the first thing that you kind of have to do in sort of building up to, I guess I could tell you what this is at like the highest level, not necessarily achievement-wise, but in terms of like how far you can go with it. There are sites, and I'll mention them, where you can buy the actual stems, they're called, but the individual tracks of mostly a lot of worship albums. They have a lot of gospel ones too. Now, but you can buy, like, say, Man of Sorrows from Hillsong. You can get the actual stems, the drums, all three guitars, all four keyboard parts, the background vocals. You can get the percussion. You can get the extra little drum loop that comes in for a half measure between this and that. You'll get everything. And from a production standpoint, it's actually really fascinating to see. Those tend to cost about $30 to $40 for the actual kind of artist stems. but you can run, minus the vocals, everything that you heard from like Phil Wickham's version of This Is Amazing Grace. It could be exactly the same except it'd be you singing. Some people argue, well, if you have like the best player, virtual players and the best instruments, why don't you just put his vocal in there too and we could all just, you know, deal with that. But which is a valid criticism. But think like, why do we do this? Are we Are we losing kind of the humanity with it? So anyways, so setting a foundation with this, you really have to start with running a click. And one of the things I should say from the get-go is, how many of you use floor monitors exclusively? Okay. This will require you to think of some sort of in-ear system of some sort. And you can go fancier, less fancy route, but you don't want people hearing, you don't want them hearing, you know, the click or a lot of the other things that you're, you know, or chorus, two, three, four, you know. They don't need that type of direction. So you're going to have to get away. So that may be disappointing, but you have to think of a way to get in-ears or some sort of system like that. Now, you could do this very simply and give your drummer some sort of ears and plug into something, a metronome, an iPod with some files on it, and he could run a click. But there are benefits to having some other people in the band have it as well. Any of you who have started running a click found the benefit of it, you know, just making your group tighter? I don't know if anyone's ever had the experience of starting a song too slow or starting too fast or getting too fast. That's probably never happened since Tuesday. So yeah, that happens all the time. It can help us kind of be tight. And actually, I tell all my guitarists, and I had, you know, some of the guys I studied with, studio players in LA, say, you know, sounds like a simple thing, but you need to practice even just strumming with a metronome. It'll help you get that click. If you do any recording, anytime, you're going to play to a click in your ear. And that can be a hard thing to do, but it'll just help you be a better player. It'll help your groove. The band will be tighter and stuff. There's something powerful about keeping that going and not drifting. Although there are some, I should say, songs that I don't use a click on at all intentionally. And I'll use this at a variety of levels. Sometimes, you know, a multi-track minus the instruments I have. Sometimes just a click and a pad. Sometimes just a click and sometimes nothing. All in the same Sunday. So it just really depends on what we're going for. So all the benefits there. Tech options. I'm going to talk a lot about Ableton, which I think is a really great program for you to use. And there are several levels of getting into it. But you wouldn't have to use, this is Ableton. You wouldn't have to use Ableton. You could use an iPod with some files on it with a click or something. Or you could use some of the main sites you can go to for resources. Multitracks.com and loopcommunity.com each have an app. One of them is Prime and the other one's Playback, and I forget which goes for which. but they each have an iPad app that's really useful that can be used to the full extent of what they offer. You can run multitracks from it, or you can just run a click or something. And so that can be really helpful. And it doesn't have to be something really, really fancy. One other thing is they already have it set up here. I think I left it in my bag. That is very, very useful. You can do more than this, but you could certainly just do this. Is getting this cable that's an eighth inch, goes into your headphone jack on whatever you're plugging into. That's stereo eighth inch to two mono quarter inches, so you have like a left and a right. So you can send the things you don't want people to hear here, and you think send the things you do want people to hear, the audio, to the other side. And this is $5 on Amazon or something like that. It's really, really inexpensive. You can go fancier than that with like an interface, and that's actually what we use, so that if we have a multi-track with a bunch of parts, I can send them individually to our sound guy, and he can tweak all of them. Otherwise, I have to make sure that the mix is good. So this cable, it's really cheap. And on, actually, this is still up here from the guitar class. My website, patrickandersonguitar.com, should have probably written it a little bit bigger. The blog on there has a lot of guitar resources, but I did a couple posts on Ableton, too, that give you some real essential links to, okay, you want to know how to build a click, you want to add vocal cues, you want to do this, what's the tech that you need, where are the resources to go to? So you can check out that blog post. That would be useful for you. And it has like links to where to buy these and stuff, although I'm sure you can find them. So you could go very simply from an iPod, just running a click type of a thing that could go into people's ears. With that left and right, that mono left and right, you would have to have like, two DIs for that to go in, so two channels kind of dedicated to it. And you'd keep one of them obviously muted in the house. okay. So what I tend to use, though, and I think is a really, at a variety of reasonable and one extravagant price point, is a great resource for you to try out. The first level of Ableton is like, I don't know if it's called Intro or something like that. It's around $90. Sometimes they do sales. It can be like $80. And that will give you a limited number of these little scenes here that you can use, but you could very easily set up a click like that. The standard, which is around 200 something, lets you create like libraries and gives you a lot of extra. There's like a $1,000 version too, which is probably a lot of stuff that most of us would never use. So let me show you just kind of what would be a very, very simple version of what you might do with this. Let me just start this. Let's say I'm starting a song. I just start that, it's in my ears. And you know how a click works in playing to it. The next song I could have set up a certain way at a different tempo, the next song and the next song. Let me show you how to do this very quickly. And actually, before I do that, I can set, and I can have on a laptop, someone triggering these things, and I can just, you don't have to have an external controller or something, I can just do this. One, two, or whatever keys you want. And so, excuse me, I can go through, and here's my first song. After we're done with that, someone pushes two, and after that bar is over, it starts the next one. Push three, and after the bar is over, this one's 6/8. After that song is done, and the bar, it goes to this one. So it's really easy to trigger that. Someone can just do that who has an extra hand, keyboard player. I have...
Can you trigger it with your foot?
Yeah, with the little interface. This is kind of a complicated one, the Keith McMillan soft step. If you really love to dive into MIDI, this is the one for you. Although Loop Community, and there's another guy named Christian Ponsford, he's in the UK, have some great resources as well. This is powerful. Each of these pads is pressure sensitive, X and Y, back and forth, twisting and stuff. And, you know, I never use that to the full extent. But I do have it set up so I can do volume, which I'll show you in a second. And then I could use them just for triggering and stuff. So if I wanted to do that, it has really easy kind of MIDI setup. So I can do something like, did you see that just showed up in the top corner there? Do this one. I press this button. That one, and so on. Oops. And so now I can just start this. That song is over. This is picking. Next song. And you just have hands-free kind of a thing.
You said Patrick, but are you hitting different pedals for every different tempo?
Yeah, what I just did was I mapped... What I set up here, and I'm going to show you how to do this quickly here. What I did was I set up like a tempo for a song, and then I just mapped it to this button right here on my little pedal. So that starts the first song. And see if you can see that, the little yellow bar, if you can see it maybe better here, is going to go down to the next one. It's going to go down to the next one. And so that triggers it however you want. And I have a... Oh, I didn't map the stop button to this one. I also have a stop button here. Let's see if that does it. There we go. Yeah, so I can do this, and say we get off click or something, I can stop it and bring it back in later on. and so all that said, there are a variety of ways you can control Ableton with your keyboard, with a little USB keyboard that you'd plug in. You could say, if you had like a controller that you plugged in that was a keyboard controller, you could set it to anything, any button, any key, or anything like that. You can set it to anything on your keyboard. You can use like a floor pedal like this one. Loop Community also has one called the Looptimus Prime. And that one was probably, they've really made that for like worship leaders. This one has soft buttons, and I've heard people complain that, like, I really hope I triggered that, because sometimes, you know, it doesn't start right away. The other, like, Looptimus has, actual switches that you hit and stuff, and it's kind of nice, tactile. and a bunch of other stuff you can do with that. But if you just look, if you can see, can everyone see that? It's a little too glary. I can't see it, but what I did here was I just, let's like start a new one right here. I can just take, let's see, I'm just going to call this song, just call it song, and I will do then a semicolon, and I'm going to write in, somebody pick a BPM for me. 144. Okay, 144. Then I'm going to write BPM, then a semicolon, and then let's say 4/4. And now that's set to, I have to do, for Ableton to trigger, and this isn't really like the intricacies of Ableton sort of class. It has to have something to grab onto. Just because I named one of these slots doesn't do anything. And so they have something called a MIDI clip that you can throw in there. But this is something that you'll get if you get into this. It's really simple. You can do it from the menu up here, or you can just right-click and say Insert MIDI Clip. And it just gives it something to grab onto. and so there you go. You just made a tempo for a song. And as quickly as we did that, with the first kind of intro Ableton and that little $4 or $5 cable going into two DIs, you can do the click and then some other stuff after that. And that would take you like 2 minutes to set up 10 songs or something, which is pretty simple and really nice. You can just trigger it from your pedal, have it set. It's really easy to use. Just about anybody else in your group could push a button. So you can deal with that. Any questions on just like that basic sort of click and running that with Ableton? Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's do... yeah, I will... What I practically do is we'll do a bunch of stuff just with a click. I mean, yeah, that keeps you together, but I will often use that as... Oh. Now I really have to tune. I thought I did tune. Remember that joke I told? Let's say... practically how I use even just a click. And like I said, I'll use a variety of levels of this stuff. And we go to, let's see, 115, 230? Is that right? Sure. Okay. I'm going to Kenzu's class after this. So. Okay, so I will use this in a variety of ways. Even just with the click, I might talk to the band saying, I'm going to be doing the call to worship this morning. As I get towards the end or when I'm finished, I'll hit this. And that's our count in. 1, 2, 3, 4, boom. And then we all start together. And they think, wow, this band is just like telepathic. But yeah, you can easily start it like that. Let's say I get to the end of the song. I just turn it off. You do something like that, and it's totally behind the scenes, and you can even use that as your 1, 2, 3, 4. So even a simple click can be pretty useful in kind of, you know, cueing everybody to get in, as well as keeping you on time and stuff, things like that. So was there another question with just this thing?
I was just curious, yesterday when you were playing with the band, was the band using a click?
No, we weren't. Did you guys use a click? Did you use a click this morning at all?
No, we didn't.
No. Yeah.
Sorry.
Great job, man. Really, really appreciate it this morning. That was awesome this morning. Really encouraging. Yeah, and like I said, there are benefits to using a click, but there are certain songs where I wouldn't use a click. And there are certain Sundays or certain weekends where it just doesn't work for whatever reason, as technical things sometimes do. And you listen in a way you've maybe forgotten to listen for a while or something. Or you just pay attention in different ways. And you can be thankful for, you know, just not using it. And like I said, we don't need this stuff, but these are things that can help you. They can distract you too, but I'll just assume that you all have a good foundation here. So anyways, that's just the basic click. And that's where you really have to start building stuff from there. Because if you're going to add like musical elements to it, then you need to stay in time with the musical elements, and those might not stay constant for the whole song. So you can just imagine the train wrecks that would happen if you, you know. All right. Any questions with that? want to move on to some other stuff here. And it's all clear just about that simple little cable. You can get stereo eighth inch to two mono quarter inches. Send it to two boxes. Click on one side that just goes to your ears. And this does assume that you have some sort of like an in-ear monitor system. All right. Let's look at the second one. And we're sort of building up to the library that I like to use. All right. So something I would do a lot, too, is let's do this. Now I'm just kind of setting this up really quickly. MIDI mapping is really simple. If I had a keyboard plugged in, I would just push the, set it up to trigger off of anything that I wanted to on the keyboard, any button that's on that thing or any key. If you don't play like the lowest keys, you could just set it to the first four or something like that. okay, so I might do something like this. One more thing here. And again, you can see how fast this is just to trigger some stuff. Or set some stuff up to be triggered. All right. Can you see that little bar over there kind of moving? This is what I use to do something like this. Turn on the metronome here. I might do some finger picking or something. And just have kind of an ambient pad going in the background. And that goes to the guy in the back so he can make sure it's not the loudest thing in the house. But you can see that just kind of fills it in a little bit. If any of you were at, I think it might have been West when Matt Boswell's group led, and he had just a simple group. They had this kind of ambient pad come out of nowhere, and I saw that it was the keyboard player who was just triggering it off of an iPad. Again, you have the right type of cable. It just sends that to the house, whether they were using a click or not. In fact, last week our click wasn't working for some reason, and so we just had that, and you know, it kind of filled in the gaps. And I can bring that in or out. Say if I want that to start the song, but then I want it out, and then I want it to come back in for like a down chorus or something like that. And that's a really easy thing to add in. And this is all I would basically do in Ableton is there's my hard drive. Okay, is I would take a pad and I would just drag it over to a little, you know, the spot where I wanted it, and now it's there. And so, again, this isn't like everything about Ableton, but you can see that it's pretty easy to use like that. You just drag stuff in, you can set the tempo for the song, the time signature for the song very easily. You can add different types of pads. Whatever you want, you can put in there, anything that's an audio track. This one might be more of like a, I don't know, where you're going with it. You know, kind of a bigger song, whereas this other one has a little bit more, you know, different feel to it and stuff. So you can do all sorts of stuff like that. There are a number of resources you can just go right now to get some that are made in every major and minor key. Like this guy, Carl Verkade, is this ambient guitar guy. He has some on his Bandcamp site. You can donate what you want. And all 12 keys, major and minor, he has some of them that go on for like 30 minutes and stuff. So if you wanted something like that, you could. And like I said, for our church, we have like a full group of musicians, a full band, and we have a Saturday night service, which is about 70 people, and is much smaller and much more of an acoustic kind of a thing. And sometimes I'll use things like that. You know, still you have to be musical. You can't just, you know, leave it on for the entire time. You could. Sometimes I forget to turn it off. but these are, again, things that you can add. And this is actually kind of my favorite thing to do is just start the click with a pad that I can bring in and out. Because if you can imagine, if you have the actual stem, recorded stems of something, you have to play along with that arrangement. there are ways you can be flexible with this, but it doesn't lend itself really easily initially to being like spontaneous and stuff, which is one of the drawbacks of it. But we'll talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, I'm starting all these different songs. You can see how it kind of goes in like that. I'm not sure if I've set like a little reverb on some of these so that they fade out kind of nicely too. Yeah, that was a little too sharp. But you see how it went to the other one? I would fix that. And then, as I might do, stop it at the end of that song and then trigger the new song, and it kind of sneaks in there a little bit. And you can imagine the rest of the group playing. That's not the thing that you notice the most. It just sort of fills in the gaps a little bit. So that's one of my favorite things to do, is just have that available with some sort of control for the volume. And another thing you could do to control the volume without, you know, a fancy kind of MIDI foot controller is get a volume pedal. Find it on Craigslist, Ernie Ball, VP Junior, something like that for $60, and go from your cable, your stereo eighth inch, into the volume pedal and out into the DI from that with another quarter inch, and now you've got full control of all the audio in a way that probably feels a little bit nicer than this. So that, again, inexpensive ways to kind of get into that as well. Does that make sense? And we're sort of just building little by little. All right. So that is that session. All right. The next thing that you could do with this is, again, building on the foundation of a click, adding some sort of ambient track of some sort, is starting to add what they call vocal cues. And this, granted, when I first heard about this, I was like, why? Why do you need this? If you haven't heard vocal cues before, I'll give you that experience. All right.
Intro.
2, 3, 4.
You know, it'd be something like that.
Verse. 2, 3, 4.
So you know when stuff is coming. What we should be, I forgot to turn on the click. A little bit loud. And you can see the cues that are in there. Again, these are things that you can just drag into Ableton, into the right spot. And you can see I'm lost somewhere in the song. This is going to bring me back.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And so that can help you. That can really help you along, kind of guiding you and reminding you where stuff is coming. Now, at a high level, would you need this as a musician to like remember where the chorus is coming? Not explicitly, but when you're using extra tracks with extra musical elements, you need to be pretty sure that you know when that bridge is coming, when all that stuff is happening, so you're not a measure too early or something like that. As we know, can kind of happen. You know, the guitarist puts a capo on the wrong fret or something. So that's what a vocal cue looks like here. Here's how you can see, let's see, I'll probably have to open a different one. But yeah, I can use cues, I cannot use cues. That can be really helpful for like learning an arrangement. There have been times when, because we don't do a weekly rehearsal right now, I have 3 services and 2 different groups that tend to play. That can speed things up a little bit, just with your arrangement on a Sunday morning. And it can be kind of helpful. It can be sort of annoying, you know, if it's not something you actually, you know, always need all the time. But again, it's an extra thing that you start to add in over the top of the click. And once you do that, then you have the markers of, let's see if I can just pull up an actual multi-track here. Oops. Opening. You can start to build on that, because then you really know where that verse is coming, you know where this is coming, and you start to even write musical elements for that, or you can use the stems that came from whatever. And when you tend to buy something like this, what's going on? When you tend to buy a file from like multitracks.com or loopcommunity.com, which are kind of the main ones, oh, probably Yeah, but there we go. They will give you the vocal cues for the actual album arrangement.
Is that where those came from? The ones you just played?
Probably. Okay. No, I made that, yeah. Well, one thing you can do, two things you can do. You can buy this file prepackaged. It's going to be exactly like it is on whatever recording. And we rarely ever do it like that because it's, you know, it might not have a congregational flow. It might not be the way you want to do it. So I usually pare it down to like, this is how we tend to do it, and I can repeat from there. but they'll give you the vocal cues and everything. You can also download like the vocal cue audio little wave files, and it's just like a short thing that says one or two or chorus. And you can build your own, just sort of dragging it into the track where it happens. And look at this right here. See, I wish I could kind of zoom into this, but can you see at the top there where it says intro and there's that little arrow sign, verse one? Those are sort of your markers in Ableton that as you get one of these files, it'll come prepackaged for you like this, and you can make your own really easily. Say if I want to move stuff around, I can left click, add locator. Now I have something else that I can name right there. Let's get rid of that. and so see this little file right here, that little waveform? Those are the vocal cues telling you you're going into each of the sections. And then you can start to build a musical arrangement of this. So this is the Bethel version of This is Amazing Grace, if you know that song. And if I just play this... Oh, sorry, let me get the cues back in. If I just play this, this will be the album minus... minus the main vocals. One of the things you can do in Ableton, which is also very cool, is that you can change the key of any audio file you have by doing something as easy as, see where I am down here, this little transpose? I can just drag it. I'm changing it up a half step or whole step or 13 or whatever. And usually with whatever files you have, you're good for... you know, two or three steps either way. Christian?
I'm assuming that maybe you can, if you don't want all of them, you can...
Yes, when you don't... Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that for sure.
What do you mean by two or three steps?
Like a half step. Like, say if it's an A and you want to...
I know that, but I mean, if it's like, if it goes fourth or fifth...
Yeah. With the... Sometimes these come with like BGVs too, background vocals, and or just like the gang vocal choir that's in there. And once you transpose those a step or two, it sounds pretty bad. As if you wanted to use those anyways. So I've experimented a couple times taking like the kind of the gang vocal choir thing and just putting it into the bridge a little bit. Now, I haven't done that for a long time, but I did practice that, and just, you know, there's actually Justin Kendrew's Rejoice. His album, Water in the Blood, is on there. You can get all the stems. It's really interesting. And again, for production stuff, you know, you find some arrangement of some... Honestly, there are some sort of youth-oriented, popular, synth-driven bands that I'm probably not going to lead songs from because I don't, you know... Looking for a little bit more content for my multi-generational church. But I love the arrangements of it. I'll get something and just study the track. You can get a lot of like gospel tracks like this too and just have a look into like, you know, what Israel Houghton did on, you know, what the guitar part is like and just check that out and start actually really learning from that. You can go to the multitracks.com and get the, not buy anything, but look at the demo on the page of the track that you're looking at. And you'll get about a minute and a half of a full breakdown of the song with tracks that you can mute and stuff, and so you can solo like a minute and a half of something. You can make your own custom mix of that. Let's say you just know you're always going to have this, this, and this. You can make that custom mix, and that's like your loop. And I guess just to say quickly, I mentioned loops and multitracks. They really both serve the same purpose of being something that you play to. I much prefer multitracks. They're more expensive, but it gives you flexibility to mix. To choose, like, I want this now, I don't want this now. My philosophy, and you're asking if you can, like, turn things off. Yes, you can and you want to. Something in my musical soul cringes to have, like, something obviously being sounding from the speakers that's not playing on this on like the platform. Like, you know, we come to this spot and there's the electric guitar solo or something, and everybody's like, "What's going on?" Or where's the brass section coming from? You know, or the string section. You know, I tend to avoid all that stuff, and I'm not going to insult my players by like adding the piano part where the piano player is there. I've experimented where you have like four electric parts. You can take this track, you can see it along, you can see it like this, like you're looking at it right now, or you can see it in this other view, which is, I like more for triggering and stuff, but this is more of your arrangement view. I can mute whole parts of tracks, and I might bring in like a low guitar part that's just chordal onto like the big last chorus or something like that. And again, I'm just really careful how I use this stuff, that it feels like, you know, I'm keeping my musical dignity. And I tend to go for things that are textural. And that could be pad stuff. That could be, you know, there could be a little movement here or there, but that blends in with what we're doing and adds a little bit of fullness. Not I have to sound exactly like the recording of something like that. And that kind of brings up, and it's worth saying here, that sort of brings up, I think, a question that, something that we have to deal with, whether we use this or not, whether we're in a traditional setting, whether we're in a contemporary setting, is does the way we sing, does it have to sound a certain way for us to respond, like for us to get into it? Does it have to be from just an organ? Does it have to be with a band? If it doesn't have like that sound of that type of band, you're just like, you know, I like that church better. I just like worship better or something like that. And I think that's something that, you know, as we recognize that like that's bad, it's there in our, you know, in our own hearts as well a little bit. And this cannot help you there. Where one of my kind of critiques of it, it's things in the back of my head that I, you know, even when teaching this class and thinking about it, is that it can sort of perpetuate the idea that we have to sound like that. Like that, you know, we have to sound like the latest release of whatever, and to try to keep up with the times or to try to be cool or something like that. And we cannot really be serving the people that we have, the musicians that we have, and the unique expression of where we are. Not to say that that can't sound a lot like something that's released, or that you can't get great ideas from that, or that they're not great arrangements and stuff. But do you get what I'm saying? It's a temptation to think we have to sound a certain way in order to respond, which, you know, is something that confronts us whether we're using this or not. And I'm really grateful how the Worship God Conference intentionally has a diversity of people leading different types of bands, you know, stripped down to just like two acoustic guitar players, awesome group we had this morning, to just more of a band that you might find in a typical, I don't know how to describe it, but, you know, just a lot of different sounds to show you that there's a diversity of expression that's beautiful and valuable and amazing and so anyways, that's one of the things that can, you know, be a temptation with this, and the way that it cannot help you is thinking that I have to sound like that. And again, I had one Sunday kind of early on when I was using this stuff where I'd created this new track. I was using some of the stems and stuff, and I was excited, this is going to be great, we're introducing this new song, it's going to go over really well, and just as often happens, you know, someone got sick, it was a key player, like a rhythm player, and so all of a sudden your band crumbles, and you think, okay, now what am I going to do? And I was really kind of bummed out that I'm not going to have, like, this big, impressive sort of a thing. And I wasn't thinking of it like that, but that's what was really going on. And that can, again, we don't have to have that to deal with this, to deal with that problem. You know, just... maybe it'll be a good thing for you, and it will expose idols in your heart and certain things. But again, just some of the things that you can get into with this. So this is a full-on multi-track stem.
Intro.
2, 3, 4. Verse. 2, 3, 4.
Sing along. Yeah. And this is everything. But let's say... you can hear the choir in there a little bit somewhere. All right, I'm going to take... since I have a bass player, let's jump to a chorus. I have a drummer, I have a bass player, I have a piano player, I have an electric player, I have an acoustic player. I wish I could get rid of that vocal. I don't know where it is right now. But now, let's see.
Intro, two, three, four.
I just have kind of the surrounding parts. Vocal is awful. But let's see. Oh, there we go. It's the ambience in there. Let's do that again. So this is like the reacher there.
First.
Who makes the orphans, the son and daughter? Got a little shaker in there and stuff. Did you notice the shaker before I stopped playing? Some people did, some people didn't. And so these things just kind of blend in and can add a fullness to what you're doing, which is kind of nice. I wouldn't do that as like just like solo guitar and push play. That would just, you know, I've seen examples of people who rely on this completely. I've seen people who use it in like, you know, a church plant where they have a guitar player and a drummer and then everything else is like, you know, all 12 cents and stuff. And I don't know, maybe that works for them. You know, the reality is that there are church plants who just use a recording because they have no musicians. And, you know, I was thinking something like this could actually be, if you're just using a recording anyways, get the vocals out of there and make it a little less, you know, like you're just pushing play on a recording. So you could see that there's, you know, a variety of things you can do with this. Did that make sense, how I was just pulling parts out? If you haven't used some sort of audio software like Pro Tools, GarageBand, Audacity, any number of Logic, whatever, then there might be a little bit of a learning curve. Like, well, what am I looking at here, the Space Console? But if you know a little bit about that, it's easy to mute things. And bring it back in and actually make your own arrangements and all sorts of stuff like that. So that would be adding, excuse me, like a full-on sort of, a full-on multi-track and being able to take parts out just to suit kind of what you want. I've been tempted a couple times where we'd have like no bass player to just sort of like play bass in to the arrangement and use that. But again, that sort of goes against my rule of feeling weird about having something really critically part of the sound that's not being actually played, so you might feel differently. But any questions on just that much so far?
Yeah. Wow, so this program's not specific to like Mac or
Windows. No, which is that's a really good thing. It's not specific to Mac or Windows. It's just either one, so Ableton. And again, there are three levels of getting into it, like the $90, $100 version, which is limited in what you can do, but you could still set up Click very easily. To the 200-something version, which you get the full range of it, then like the studio version, which is $1,000. Which,
what have you got on yours?
This is like the $200 version. When I first got it, I had just the intro, and I think you're limited to maybe like 10 little what do you call it, sessions, or there's my hard drive, 10 little slots to like to, you know, put songs in, and so you'd have to recreate it every week. Which wouldn't be that bad, but if you started adding stuff and you had like, you know, multi-tracks you were using or something, you'd be building that every single week, or you'd have a bunch of saved files.
If you got the $90 version, would you be able to like upgrade to the
$200 version? I think so. Does anybody know for sure? Probably. Yeah, probably.
You said a little bit earlier, I think that you send all your individual tracks to the front of house. Do you ever bust them down into one spot?
I don't usually, and again, I don't use all the tracks. I will do a couple different things. Sometimes, if I have the time, I'll take the parts. Like, if I wanted to use all three guitar parts or something like that, which I probably wouldn't, I could make sure they were all at the, kind of the level I wanted to. And you really have to like run this through kind of before. I usually don't anymore, and you pay for it every once in a while, but you know, just want to kind of be careful with it. You can, you know, if you have a good mix on something, you can just send it. And that would be, you know, like doing a loop. But with a multitrack, you can take, you know, the three guitar parts or all the key parts and sum them to one and then just send that there. What I do is I'll show you what I do. Instead of setting it up every single week, this is what I have set up for convenience, for flexibility, and I would have all of those parts routed to an interface that has, I think we have six channels on it. So anything to do with beats goes to one. Anything to do with, I'm making this up, I don't remember, like guitars would go to two. And so if I have like four guitar channels, which I'm using, which again, I probably wouldn't, they all funnel to that and the sound guy can do that. And then he can tell me like, I need a little less of that high part and I can deal with it. Okay, so here's what I use. And this is my library. Every week, yep. And so what I've done with the standard version of Ableton, if you can see off on the right, sort of randomly color-coded here, but I have a lot of the songs that we tend to use. It's not every single song we use, but I have a lot of the songs we use. And you can see over here, just to explain a little bit of it, and just very generally, what this does is it saves me having to do a lot of work every week. And so let's say we have this Sunday we're doing, I know we're going to start with 10,000 Reasons, and so I'll do that. And if it's been set to something else, it'll say, are you sure? And then we're going to do like the Mighty Fortress Heart Song version. And then, it's an amazing version of Mighty Fortress, the old hymn by this group called Heart Song. Grant, I don't know if he remembers anything, but so this is going to be the fourth song we do, and then I don't know, Bless Be Your Name is going to be the third song we do. And so I just did that little quick MIDI mapping thing, and now, I have to turn on the metronome here. One thing that I did with the metronome, if you've used Ableton before, it has a stock metronome sound that goes deek. And it has like that little emphasis for the downbeat. I changed the sounds, which is not hard. You can't do it from the basic menu, but you can get kind of behind the scenes and swap out the little audio files for the downbeat and the upbeats. If I would start the click and I was just sort of like finishing reading something or talking, or I wanted to respond in between songs a little bit more and I left that running, I'm not, in my mind, following where the downbeat is and just a click. And so I might start the song and the downbeat's now on three, which it's not, you could deal with it, but it's kind of annoying in the back of your mind. And so I just changed that to a stock kind of woodblock sound. So every beat is exactly the same. It's just kind of this innocuous, sort of always the same, ready to go, whatever you want. So now, less the... And I would make sure to get out of that before that started again, but... whatever key that's in. Yeah, it's in the wrong key. I would do the capo switch, and sometimes, you know, that pad in there, as it's going from this and I end, I can let that sort of end, and then I can sort of start with this. I hope it's in B-flat. It's a B. We do it in B. It's in C, you're right. That's never happened before. Yeah, right. B flat. And but you can see how I'm just switching between these songs. And that pad, if I want to use it, is a nice little, you know, just connection. Not that you couldn't use like cymbal accents or have a guitarist do something, but that is a tool that you can use. And that's something that I will a lot, but I can also do this with it. just get rid of it, and it's just a click. And I'll do that a lot, because I won't use that on every single song. To do the same predictable thing every single time with the same, like, here comes the pad. And that's, again, it's like, do you have to have it start like that for us to be able to get into what we're doing? And certainly not. And you don't necessarily want to entrench that idea by doing it every single way like that. And so did you see how it was just simple? Like, if I wanted to do it differently the next week, I would just say, we're going to start with Crown Him. So that'll be the first one. And I could do that with the keys, too, if I wanted. Sorry. I could do this and say, someone's going to use the keyboard. I'm going to start with Cornerstone. Yes, I want to do something else. I'm going to do Glorious and Mighty second. I'm going to do Holy, Holy, Holy third or fourth or whatever. And now all I have to do is that. Let's say for the second song, if there's a pad, which there's not, I want it. And that could be a nice little thing behind, like an a cappella sort of opening or whatever, if you want it or not.
And Patrick, for any of these songs, you've already got the tempo preset.
Yes.
You've got the key established if you're going to have one of those things fading in and out.
Yeah, and I can explain a little bit about like what's going on here. Again, this is the library. So what you've done is you basically drag in a song. And on that blog post that I did, because we don't have time to like walk through every aspect of this necessarily, I posted to a lot of tutorials on getting to the intricacies of how to import a song and stuff. Because you basically just drag a song in, or you what you'll often get with these files are the Ableton session, like the file for the whole song, as you saw in This Is Amazing Grace. And you'll also get a folder of the wave files. And so I'll take the wave files and I'll grab drums and I'll put it there, even though I never use drums as that. I just kind of like to have it in because part of it is just kind of studying arrangements. You can really get in and see, like, what exactly did they do? Learn parts like that. Find out what you do when you have four guitar players. You can see where this very mature guitar three guy doesn't play except for the bridge. So with much musical restraint. And so it can just give you a sense of arranging or ideas, parts. Like if you want to get into B3 playing a little bit more, you can go find some tracks that have that on them and hear, like, oh, that's what that part sounds like. He's not playing it like a piano or whatever. So, yeah.
I know you play electric a lot, and of course acoustic. Kind of like with more unique music coming out, where you, as an electric player, you're like, I could, you know, this would actually sound kind of cooler as a synth part rather than my electric part.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ableton, that's what it looks like. It looks like a little keyboard.
Yeah.
So, like, I would love to be able to, you know, play electric part and, like, hey, this song doesn't really need any more grid or anything else than that, but I would just need, like, a pad to play live.
You
is
can.
That done with Ableton,
yes, yes, absolutely. Have any of you used Mainstage before? Are you familiar with Mainstage? Yeah, that's a great, inexpensive. It's pretty intuitive too, where you can plug in your, you know, your keyboard controller and say, I want these sounds, and this is how I switch them. And now you just got it on your. And they have a bunch of built-in sounds and stuff. You can use plugins or whatever. but you can also create instruments here, and you can trigger that from here. Go talk to Andrew King. About that, because he's kind of the guru there. But yeah, you can do that. It's more complicated than to use like something like Mainstage, but you totally can do that. And this can be your instrument, and you can switch between different instruments and stuff too that you're actually playing, as well as like triggering things.
I'd like you to talk a little more about the editing process. When if you get this locked dock barrel and they record seven times, and you only record
Seven times. No, although it does take a little bit of time. And that's something to consider with this. Do you want to spend the money? And do you have more time to spend on something like this? You know, setting up the click is easy. And that's something that you should all try if you can. You know, you don't have to do it with Ableton, but you could try that. That and a pad that you can control with a volume pedal or whatever, that's something you can do. It's kind of up to your own creativity what you want to put in there. But the more you do, the more you have to have a guide to tell you, like, hey, this is coming up. Don't forget that you need to lock in with this. But the editing is, it does take a little time, but it's not, you know, something that you can't pick up. And if we have a sec, I'll even, like, you know, try to cut out a section or something. But for an example, Cornerstone, Hillsong, solid rock. That arrangement, they had a really long instrumental, and they also did the chorus a bunch of times, like more than I would want to, kind of maybe from verse 2 to verse 3 or something, I can't remember. And so I cut out a couple of those, put those together, made sure the markers, the vocal cues were right. I would like listen through the whole thing just to make sure. And then it's as easy as sort of cutting out a part, and you can do it two different ways. One where you can cut it and it'll leave a spot, or one where you can cut it and it'll just kind of glue it together. And then you just have to make sure that your parts line up and stuff. You know, if you're using some synth pads that now, are they doing the same thing going into that chorus as they were going into the next chorus? And you can do things with controlling like the volume of that. You know, if you're used to kind of editing a little bit, you can, you know, blend it a little bit more or cut and paste from another section. And it can get really complicated if you want it to, but it could also be pretty simple. But I do that with almost every arrangement because, you know, you have a little bit more flexibility with the recording. And that might not be the congregational way that you'd want to do it. And you even see here on the right where I have kind of the master list of all the songs. Sometimes there are, like Cornerstone right here. You can see one is just plain old Cornerstone. And then this is Cornerstone with short or no instrumental, or a shortened kind of section there. And this is just Cornerstone at the tempo with the right keypad, just the click.
Go ahead. Save as?
Yeah, what I would do, you start with the main file. You start with your main file that you buy, and you have to bring that into your library if you're doing that. You could run it from just that file if you were just doing one song. But you would get it as the album version, you know, was written, because it is that version. And what I'll usually do is edit it, save as Cornerstone shortened, or This Is Amazing Grace something. And so I'll keep that all in kind of one sort of folder for that song. And you can see on my hard drive, here is my multi-track library with just a lot of the songs. I haven't even imported all of them in here. But as you start to build this, as you start to create your own tracks and stuff, it gets pretty sizable. So I don't know exactly how big this is, but it's not small. And that's it. I think it's at least a 500 gig hard drive. For Man of Sorrows, let's see if there's something. Yeah. Here's Man of Sorrows, the key of D. I might have different keys. Here's Man of Sorrows. Must have kept an E flat for some reason. And I wrote Teaching, where I had, when I teach a song, I like to do like the first verse and chorus and then do it again. And so I just had it so it ran through like that. I could have waited to trigger the track until we started. Or I think I came up with some creative something that I wanted in the beginning teaching part, and then it would go into the full song. So I made a version like that.
Is it possible you can say, if like you're trying to show the other musicians, you can come up with your arrangement, and then you can export it to like a WAV file and email it out, like, hey, this is what we're going to be doing. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah, what I've done with Planning Center, if you use Planning Center, or even if you don't, you could somehow, what I do is I export, which is pretty easy to do on this, you just solo the tracks and bounce it. I'll take the cues and the piano part, and I'll, or maybe the click with it too, just so they can keep, you know, in line with it. And I'll just sum that together, and I'll put that on, I think you might have to have the rehearse license for this, but I'll put it on Planning Center. And then the piano player, if they want to listen to that part as a reference, and this is useful on a number of levels. One, you know, not all of us could hang with the band that played this morning, so different levels of playing. And so it can be a great learning tool for, like, you know, a new player that you're encouraging, hey, think like this in a song. Notice that they don't play here, or that they don't, you know, they're not all over the piano. It's kind of like a part. And this is, you know, it's actually not that hard, but it takes focus and musicality in a different way than what you do with what you typically do as a player in classical lessons or something. And so it can be a great learning device for volunteers, for yourself, just picking up parts. So you can do that. And so, you know, I'll do that with some guitar parts. I haven't done that a lot, but you can do that pretty easily. And so then they have the cues if you want the cues, so they can just practice through the arrangement, learning the part and stuff. Yeah, that can be really helpful. So you can see I just have a couple different versions of Man of Sorrows, and I might never use that teaching version again. So whether it was useful to actually make that or just wait to start the song and talk, so that's left that, leave that unsaid. But yeah, this is my library where I have all these songs. I have multiple versions of the songs. You can see right here for Rejoice, I have this where it's broken out into intro, verse, chorus, verse, alt, chorus, chorus. That's the full song, the actual arrangement. One of the things that, so we're sort of into the considerations part, as we keep talking about the library, one of the things that is challenging with this is that spontaneity is not easy. I had to take some time to set that up so that I had each of those sections and they're set within the little window down somewhere. You know, that it's telling it, once you finish this, you're going down to this one, and you, it's based not, it only knows to do it after a certain amount of bars. So you say, after 16 bars, you have to count those, make sure that's correct. After 16 bars, go to the next section. Then after 8 bars, go to that section. And it'll just go through the sections, and you can have that, each one of those little parts, set to a MIDI controller too. So you can say like, okay, now we're going to do the chorus again, and you can just hit that, and you go back to the chorus. There are more sophisticated ways you can set an audio cue so that when you push that button, it either gives you, it'll say chorus immediately, or it will say like the name of the song so that you always kind of know what you're going to. But flexibility, spontaneity can be tricky if you're really tied to the actual arrangement. Now, there are some songs like that song Rejoice, which I think we're doing whenever Kendra is leading. If you don't know, it's a fantastic song. That it's kind of short and it's kind of fast. And I don't always like repeat, like, let's go back and do verse two. It has such a logical, like, nice progression. You certainly could, but that one I don't that often. And so that one, I just use what we have. And I just, on that, I use the pad. There's like a filtered drum thing in one little section that I kind of liked. That one's kind of interesting because he has, if you know that song, Rejoice, come and lift your hands and raise your voice. It's like this massive chorus where there's no harmony. It's just like gang vocals. And all those are in there. And so you can like put that in just a little bit, and that can sort of help if we don't have like a gigantic vocal section. And again, you can do that in a way that nobody notices. And again, my idea is not to do something overt that's like, where's that stuff coming from? But it's just sort of adding to the fullness of the sound. And you might not use it every single Sunday. It might be something you do for like a big Easter service or a special outreach thing. If we're talking about just for like performing in your band, use this as much as you want and do all sorts of stuff. But as we're leading congregational singing, we want to lead congregational singing and not be distracting, to be responsive to, you know, one of the songs that I have to be careful that I don't do it every time because I love, you know, something like Before the Throne of God Above. And you get to that second verse and, you know, with how we live and how tempted we are oftentimes to just condemnation and forgetting the truth and the power and the beauty of the gospel in our lives, we get to that part. It says, when Satan tempts me to despair and tells me of the guilt within, upward I look and see him there who made an end to all my sin. Often I'll say, let's just sing that again as we come in. Do you believe that? Can we sing it? Just say it. Grab our attention. Let's speak to our souls. Let's sing that again. When Satan tempts me to despair, and you know, upward I look, and we get it like more the second time. And if you're on the train tracks of like, nope, we already got past that point, you know, you lost that. And so that can be one of the things that this can sort of put you into, edge you into that corner of the box a little bit. And so you could just stop what you're using there. And that's a reason to not be like overly tied to it, because it's like amazing sound, it's like what just happened? It just all disappeared. And so again, I did it to kind of like augment a little bit here and there parts of the overall sound. what was I saying with that? The spontaneity and stuff. There are ways to get around that, but it takes more time programming it in. And you, when you're deciding in the moment, while you're playing, while you're singing, while you're trying to be sensitive to the direction and the spirit and just the congregational response and being encouraging, Do you want to have to think about stepping on the right button to go back to the right section? Maybe you do. There are different types of minds. but even still, you might make a mistake and, you know, you trigger the bridge or something like that. But it can be done. And there's another, I haven't done this just because I decided not to do that. A friend of mine, I think it might be on the Loop Community site, there was another way they did it that was really intuitive and way easier than how I did it. Like, after 16 bars, go to this section. After 8 bars, go to that section. So there are ways that people have tried to deal with that. Some people might say and argue that, well, you know, you don't ever repeat anything but, like, maybe at the very end, like another chorus. And that's maybe true for some places, but I'm just encouraged by Bob's leadership and direction over the years and just being sensitive to highlighting certain parts of the songs, going back and doing this again, challenging our hearts in certain ways. So, yeah, I might want to do the second part of the second verse again or something like that. And that can be hard to program in. So, again, just holding this with a loose hand, not being, you know, overly tied to it and stuff, but using it in creative ways. It can be a creative tool. Let's see. Let me explain just a little bit about what's going on here so it makes a little bit more sense. If you go to, one, if you check out that blog post, you'll see a bunch of resources. But loopcommunitymultitracks.com, those will have some really nice resources for you showing you how to do a lot of different things. But this guy named Christian Ponsford in the UK has a bunch of great videos. And even this template, this is his template for a library that does certain things that I really liked, where I have different, like a bank of pad sounds up here at the top. And I never just, well, I shouldn't say never, but I don't often like run those up at the top. That's sort of like, that's where I keep them for easy moving down into other songs. And I have different types of pads that I use for different things if I want to use one. And then it goes over into the MIDI clips, which again, if you have a lot of these tracks there, it's already that, you know, line there is grabbing onto something. If you just have like, I want you to go this fast at this time signature and nothing at all in that track. It doesn't have anything to grab onto. So that's the MIDI clip, which you don't really need if you have a lot of stuff going on. You will get the click file when you buy a multi-track or a loop and the cues. And so I have separate channels for those, which I just send those to the same place. When you do this on Ableton, you can see right here, I have this cue out. 1 and 2, that's like the audio, so we can hear it in both ears. And then, no, that's set actually backwards, so we can hear it right now. You want one going one place and the other going the other. So you can set the cue out to be 2, and then your other side, 1, can be all the audio. So that just you're getting the cues or just the click or whatever, and everyone is, you know, just hearing what you want people to hear. And so you can just use the built-in click. You don't have to be savvy about, you know, setting it up yourself, changing sounds. Loops, if I want to use loops, which I don't often because I love the flexibility of a multi-track. Again, they do sales every once in a while during the year, but they're not usually 20. They're usually like 30 to 40 bucks a song, which can be another deciding factor. This metronome thing, I'm not using it. I was working on setting up a side bus thing that I never quite figured out so that I could turn the metronome off and on during the song. And just as an aside, there is crazy stuff that you can do with this. You can do what I'm doing right now, which might seem kind of crazy, but you can also send MIDI messages through a box to control your lighting so that your lighting is matching with your arrangement. So in the bridge, it switches to this. It sends out MIDI messages to do that. If you use an iPad and you're using some of the programs to read your music from the iPad, you can send MIDI messages to turn the page for your music with the arrangement. And again, this is getting very automated, and you might not want to do that, or you might just not need it if you don't have charts or something. You can have it control. You probably could. You can have it control Pro Presenter, so it can. You know, I've thought that would be a lifesaver. That one Sunday when you know the person who runs the computer, media computer, is sick, or we just have nobody because it's summertime. So you can have it run Pro Presenter if you want, so that it's sending change to this, and that could be linked with your. If you spent the time breaking up a song, it would be linked to going wherever you would want it to go to. Just imagine never having a missed slide, always being on time.
Do you have to build an external app for
Probably with ProPresenter, yeah. There are a number of things, yeah, I think that you probably have to do. But you can do stuff like that. So, and then I have just my banks of multitracks, which I can just, you know, minimize like that. But here is just for whatever arrangements, I just keep adding instruments. So bass, synth bass, drums, drum loop, percussion, percussion two, piano, keys, beat the organ, pads, pads two, three, four, five, six. Some songs have crazy amounts of stuff. And again, I'm kind of coming from it, like I'm halfway interested in the arranging too. So I'll tend to put everything in there and just disable a bunch of parts of it. And so these are just all the instruments, and you can see as you go through, like this is grayed out. To disable something, I just push zero. So again, you might not remember that, but you can see in a number of ways that Ableton is pretty simple to use. Once you get past that, it looks kind of wild. And so these are just all the multitracks that I have on here, different things that would be happening, and here's the library that I have on the side. And I can just add new songs, drag in the waves. And when I would add a new song, I would grab the drum wave and I would put that, you know, I'd drag it over to here and put it there, grab the perk, grab the bass, and I would just set up the song like that. You do have to be careful, and you'll get this warning in some of the tutorial videos. You have to set the correct tempo and time signature, or else it gets really messed up. So you just, it will tell you the click. Like in the file name, it'll say, whatever song at 99 BPM. And so you know that's where you got it. And you can, like I said, you can slow it down without changing the pitch. You can change the pitch without speeding it up or whatever, or slowing it down. So you can do a number of these things. It's called warping. And you have a lot of flexibility with whatever track you want to use. And it can handle that. But you have to make sure that there are some things you do when you enter it in that sort of lay the correct foundation for getting it set. So did I answer the questions that have been asked already? If I haven't, feel free to raise your hand. Just to kind of summarize, we've talked about some of the issues, hard issues. Does it have to sound a certain way for us to respond? Does it have to sound a certain way for us to be satisfied? Are we really serving our people by doing it exactly like the Phil Wickham version of whatever? Or even exactly like, you can't really get Sovereign Grace stems, but if you know, would you want to do it exactly like that? And maybe there are great ideas, and maybe that's kind of how you do it. That can be great learning for your group too, just kind of aspiring to trying to learn how these arrangements go together and stuff. But that might not serve where you are well. You say if you're like a smaller church, you have less resources, you could make an absolutely beautiful, simplified version of these songs without any of this. That would be just better than anything you could come up with here. Or you could, you know, work with the click. That would help you kind of for some of the songs that you might need it. Keep in time with one another, you know, work on your groove and stuff. You might be able to add a pad to that to bring in and out as you need it, not to be stuck with it. You know, get the volume pedal thing, audio into the volume pedal, audio out of the volume pedal into the DI, and now you've got total control over that. You might want to add some vocal cues to it so that you can start adding some, you know, parts. You have a really great idea, you want to add something in there, you can kind of go crazy with it. So that's kind of what we talked about. I have my blog post, Loop Community, Multitracks, Christian Ponsford, Hard Issues, Sound a Certain Way. And again, on any Sunday or Saturday, I will use like a variation of all these, or maybe none of them. Like a full-on multitrack with the parts taken out, with like synth textures and things, or I'll use a pad and a click, or just a click, or no click at all. And that could be any, you know, number of, any combination of the, sort of the song flow and stuff. So that's kind of hopefully gives you like an introduction, sort of an overview of what you can do. Feel free if you have questions for me, but I did like to get in touch. The email address is right there. But and again, I'm not an Ableton trainer. I'm like normal guy using this and trying to be creative, finding what I don't like, finding what I do like, finding what's useful, finding what's not useful, and things. So I'm happy to help as I can, but I put together some resources for you that are really good too, that point you some good directions. Any questions just in general? We're sort of up for time, but if you have questions, I'm happy to stay. Yeah.
The cost individually could be
Yeah, for each song. So I don't have a track for every song, and for some of them, I make my own because maybe I just want like this little shh kind of thing at one part of a song, and that's all I use.
Is there a site that has
bigger...
Oh, yeah. Multitracks.com, and I think Loop Community, too, both do, like, you can sort of subscribe to it and get this many credits per month or something. Or if you buy... it, they do it in a weird way where you can pay for credits for their site. So if you did a big bundle, it would be cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I don't have every song that we do for this because you don't need it, or I don't want it, or that's expensive, and it's not the best way to spend my budget. But for certain things, you can really use to learn from, to teach from, to actually use and stuff. So you might get more than what you need, but it's certainly there if you wanted it.
When you're doing the acoustic set, I want to format that
stuff. Mm-hmm.
Are you putting in some kind of percussion music?
I've thought about that. Like, setting up sort of as my instrument thing, there's a program called Stylus RMX that's kind of a percussion drum plugin where I can set basically loops that will go on forever, and I can trigger different ones and layer them. So I thought about that, but then I thought that's also kind of breaking my internal rule a little bit, and I'd rather have a cajon player. Yeah, and I usually do. But yeah, absolutely. I've thought about all of these things, and my coworkers sent me like a picture of a guy as a one-man band, because some Sundays it's been like that. If I could find a way to put a snare drum on my back or whatever. But, yeah, any other questions, things you want to talk about? I'm happy to stay here. If you need to leave, you can leave, but if there are any questions, we pray for us really fast, just that we would have wisdom. God would direct us. Father, thank you for this time. Thank you for the conference, the speakers, the opportunity we've had, the example in singing and responding to you, the way that our eyes have been opened more and more and encouraged just with gospel clarity. Lord, I pray for everyone who's thinking about using these things, just being excellent as we must strive to. Lord, would you help us to make good decisions? Help us to be wise. Help us to be humble. Help us to have hearts that would serve you and seek you first beyond whatever distractions could come with doing any of these things. Lord, bless the faithfulness of everyone here. Lord, encourage us and equip us by your Spirit to serve you and magnify your name. We pray in your precious name. Amen. I'll be up here if you have any questions. Thanks for checking out. Hopefully it was informative, useful, gives you a sense of what's possible.
What's something like that?
This is 200 something. This one's pretty complicated. Like, if I had to do it myself, I'd be lost. And so, like Christian Ponsford, some others, like Loop Community, sell a template that you can just import, and boom, it's set up for you. And so I have different banks of stuff, like 10 different banks or whatever, that I can set. The guy who created this one has different pad setups, so he can play. He has it set up to MIDI trigger triads, and so he can play through like 1, 4, 5, 6 and play chords with his feet just by going through the 1 chord, the 4 chord. People get nuts with this stuff, and it could be really cool, or it could be incredibly distracting and too much production and stuff. And so,
that's what I'd be very concerned about.
Yeah, and that's what I drive this thing completely, and so I talk about that a lot, like among our musicians as we're waiting to go out. Like, we don't need this at all, This is my philosophy behind it. We talk about it. So I want, and that's why when I was talking about doing a class like this for the conference, I was saying to Bob, I don't want to talk about some of the temptations, some of the negative aspects of it. And I think that a lot of churches, you see like this YouTube production, and a lot of people think like, I want it to be like that. And so you get a lot of churches trying to reproduce this with crazy lights, with fog, with the latest technology and stuff. And not that any of those can't be useful in some way or aesthetically meaningful, but when we think we have to do it like that, we have a pretty, our church is a pretty, like the aesthetic is pretty simple, like intentionally pretty simple. We have really nice lighting set up, but it's really simple. No moving lights and stuff. We can do colors if we want, but we don't really often. We do it so it's kind of not noticeable, and just it really illuminates the pastor and the preaching. and can maybe change for the beginning of the service and stuff. We have some really nice production, a great sound system, but they're all tools to support the preaching of the gospel, the worship across the entire service and stuff. And so that's where I don't want this to get in the way. I want it to, how is it going to serve me as a creative tool? And I've gone from looking back, like, man, that trying it out there, I was using it a lot. Like, I had, like, you know, a choir that you wouldn't notice, but it just added fullness to, like, the bridge build or something like that. And I've heard, you know, I think even rightly so, criticism towards contemporary worship, when you know what I'm talking about, music, it's worship isn't just music, that talk about it being manipulative, like we're trying to manipulate a response to get really big at the end. And I think there's something true to that if we do it the same exact way every single time. Where we, you know, and there's great value in having different versions of a song or being able to make it flexible. And that's a good mark of a song that can be done flexibly. If it has to be the biggest song ever, every single time, I'm not going to use it that often because I might want to...
Almost like here, they've done All I Have Is Christ about at least three different ways.
Yeah, yeah. And so I want to be able to do that. And if I just do this arrangement the same exact way every single time, it becomes very predictable. I can never, you know, an arrangement, a different arrangement can really shine, help to you can look at a song in a different light. Like Bob's version of "Oh, the Deep, Deep Love" has that simple little chorus, instead of like the deep, deep, you know, the traditional melody, it's in a major key. Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus. It's really beautiful in a way. You know, you often don't mess with the hymn melodies that have lasted for 100 years because no melodies last for 100 years, and if they do, you know, you aren't going to make it better. So, but that is just a beautiful setting of that, which the original hymn is in kind of a minor key. It's a major key in how Bob did it. It just sort of shines a different light on the lyrics in a beautiful way, in a meaningful way. And that's what we can do with our arrangements. So that's what you don't want to get. You just want to be careful about with this stuff, because from the people who are maybe selling it and promoting it, it'd be like, do it this way every time with the full, like, help people sing. It's going to be amazing. It's going to sound exactly like this. And, you know, it's not like you couldn't do it that way. But should you do it that way for your people, for your church, with your history, with your sensibilities, with your native expression of whatever? And yeah, if you're 40 people in the middle. Yeah. One reason, on Saturday nights, when we have 70 people, I don't use anything like this, and I rearrange all the songs. And in fact, when I first got at this church, they were using the same musical group for the Saturday night service and the two Sunday mornings, and it was a full band. And I just got the sense, one, it was really tiring for everybody, for sound crew, two, to be on from like 3:30 on a Saturday through 12 or 1 in the afternoon on Sunday. I had trouble getting people to sign up. I could tell it was tiring, but also I just felt like it was too much for our 70 people on a Saturday night, and we can do it more intimate. And maybe people intimately, maybe people would prefer that, and maybe people would come to that service for that, and I could serve them like that. Yeah, and I could serve them that way. And I really change the arrangements a lot, and I have multiple arrangements for the different songs. And I always have like a click version of the song too, where it's just the click, and I can do whatever I want with it. We can do a full big band thing. I can do a single acoustic thing. I wouldn't need the click if it was just me. But and I often don't use the click on Saturday nights either, although there are plenty of times where I wished I had. because, again, that's a different thing where it just kind of helps you think about where you tend to rush. And that's just it's just really helpful. So, yeah.
Well, I've got a lot of young drummers.
Yeah. Yeah, when it gets exciting, you know, and we're really, you know, if we're on like the fourth verse, then Christ alone, you know, or like, behold the throne of God, behold him there, the risen Lamb, the perfect spotless righteousness, you know, it's exciting, and you get into it, and all of a sudden you notice, like, whoa, we're like, it got really fast at the end, and this can just really help bring gravity to the rhythm, because the rhythm is a powerful thing that you stay in it, and preserve that groove and that feel that it just, it's a powerful thing naturally, like, melody is... has intrinsic qualities that are meaningful to it, and timbre and stuff like that, but it's a different subject. But, well, hopefully this has been like useful to give like a balanced, like, this can be a creative tool, but it's not all that all the time. You could definitely get pulled into doing like this, but you could use it like this at varying levels of complexity and stuff.